Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case.
Welcome back to another episode of Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. I'm Steph, and this week, Teresa, Linda, Heather, Nicola and I are going to start by wishing Bill a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Bill!
Unlike other writers of that era, Shakespeare actually died quite a wealthy man, but his wife, Anne, apparently only got the second best bed and the linens. That's all she inherited from him. So I think there's a great story in there somewhere. And one day, if I get the time, I might write it.
Who got his house then?
His daughter. Susanna got everything.
Oh, wow.
And Anne got the second best bed and what they called the furniture. It was actually the bed linen.
Did she get to live there for the rest of her life?
I don't know.
Oh, I need more details.
I'm sorry, I didn't go. Okay, well, as well as William Shakespeare's birthday this week, we are also, in many parts of the world, celebrating World Book Day. The UK and Australia would have done that back in March, but USA and Canada, among many, many, many other countries, are going to be doing that this week. So if you're attending any events or helping children to dress up, do let us know what you're up to on the Write Club, the podcast Facebook group, because we'd love to know. Many people have said that if Shakespeare were alive today, he'd be writing for television. And later in the show, we're going to be talking to Matt Owen, who does exactly that. Before that, we'll be enjoying work in progress from Heather and offering her some feedback, just as we do in our Write Club meetings. Nicola has a techie tip for us. At the end of the show, Linda and Sarah Gangai from the Winchester Writers Festival will be telling us what they're reading at the moment in our usual bedside table slot. But to start things off, Teresa, will you ask us to
name the novel?
Indeed I will. Pens at the ready. It's a cracker. Clue number one. This novel is the first in a sequence of 12 historical novels written from 1945 to 1953 and continued from 1973 to 2002. So the author had a 20-year break and then wrote some more. Nobody looks inspired by that. Let's try another clue. Number two. The first 7 novels are set in the 18th century. The other 5 set in the early 19th century are about the descendants of the characters in the earlier novels. Okay. I'm going to go to clue 3 and hope that something happens. The eponymous hero of this first novel is a British Army officer returning from the American War of Independence.
I know what it is.
Good. Oh. Let me finish the clue. He discovers that his fiancée is about to marry his cousin, believing him dead.
It's Poldark!
Okay, and the name of the book, the eponymous hero, what's his name?
Oh, Captain Poldark.
You don't know his first name.
No.
Ross?
Ross Poldark.
Not Ross, Ross.
Ross, yes.
So, the answer is, well done, Nicola, the answer is Ross Poldark by Winston Graham. And I chose it because we're talking about writing for TV.
Yeah.
And obviously this has been enormously popular on TV. It was adapted for television 73 to 75.
It's gorgeous, I love it.
And again, 2015 to 18, it's been done again on the BBC. So the first 4 novels were written in the 1940s and 50s. And then he started again in the 1970s.
Wow, good for him.
Yeah. And apparently the character of Ross Poldark was based on a fighter pilot Graham met on a train during World War II.
So he got the story from him and then took
it
back in time.
Yeah.
It's a glorious adaptation. The BBC have done a fantastic job with it. The clothes are amazing. The settings are really realistic. The storylines are great.
I wonder how many people have read the 12 books.
Well, sometimes when you see something you enjoy on TV, it does send you to the book.
Absolutely.
And then if it's a good series, we love to get into a good series, don't we?
And the casting's fantastic on that as well. They all, really look like you'd imagine they would look like.
Well done, Nicola.
Hey, I'm so happy.
Nicola got one.
Well done.
Well done.
Next time it's my turn.
What, to get one?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Thank you, Teresa. And now, Heather, you've gone back to your roots and started writing poems again, it seems. What have you got for us today?
Well, part of this was because I was asked to write something about everybody, and it kind of grew from the idea of writing a couple of sentences about the six of us. So, this is the tale of six writers. We sit here each week weaving tales. We've promised to be the best writers we can, and sometimes we even have fun. There's Stephanie, who keeps us in hand. She's written a book and is working on more. She's the planner and the driving force the rest of us need. She's disciplined and diligent and gets her work done. There's Linda, our American scholar. She transports us to the deep south with her stories. Her voice brings her character into the room. She's gentle and kind and our very own wise owl. There's Teresa, who's forthright and true. She's read all the books that have ever been written. Well, maybe not all, but still quite a few. She shines like a star that we all readily follow. There's Pat, our expert and teacher of grammar. She knows all the rules and puts us to shame. Colons and semicolons are all in the right place, and she can even spot the misuse of a comma. There's Nicola, the brave, with ambition and drive, with snowflakes, arcs and grids for her stories. She knows how to use all that technical stuff and holds our hands gently and guides us through. Then there's me, the beginner, who listens in awe to the writers around me. My words tumble out and onto the page. Maybe I'll finish and publish one day. We've sat here for more than 2 years. Strong friendships have formed and gained strength. Watch out, readers everywhere, we're coming to get you to share our worlds with our words and ideas.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I love it. It's so nice. If you're so nice. It's great. Beautiful sense.
I wish it was true that I keep you all in hand.
Well, you do.
Well, there's a slight typo.
Yes.
And my printer is the toner is fading. So in the verse about me, what I'm looking at, it looks like it says she shines like a tarp.
Yeah, I spotted that.
Yeah.
It should be star. She shines like a star.
Yes.
I am, since doing the poetry workshop at the Lit Fest, the Marnie Lit Fest last year, I've been writing the odd poem myself and also getting a poem a day delivered. And it's amazing how many of them I don't like. But, you know, but I really like the ones where you have to think about the words as you're reading them. I don't like the ones that go dumpty, 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 dump so much. So this is really nice. So
thank you.
I also did a Future Learn course with the University of Manchester, which I really enjoyed, which there was no charge for. It was like a poetry challenge, if you like, and I found it incredibly informative. About all, you know, I knew nothing about. In fact, I ended up writing an ode to my cleaner, which was
sonnet.
Yeah, I remember.
Maybe I should do that, because it's almost impossible for me to effectively critique poetry, because I really don't have any training, so I can't really look at anything technical. I can only really look at how it makes me feel. And I'm afraid I love the tumpty tumpty tum, and I love the rhyme. I'm a real John Betjeman girl.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm always disappointed when poems don't rhyme. I don't know why. It's just, but as I say, that is a personal feeling. It's not not a criticism. That's just a personal thing. I'm a big fan of tumpty tum and rhymes and you know, clever.
The thing is, there's different structures, isn't there? So a sonnet, and the ones I like are the ones particularly that don't rhyme but have got the same number of syllables in different lines. So perhaps the first and third line have got the same number of syllables. So it's got some sort of rhythm to it. But without that,
there's one that I was reading about earlier today called a cinquain, which has 22 syllables in the whole poem. That's a very clever way. But, you know, as I say, maybe I need to get some training, because I just find it very, very difficult to comment on poetry. I know what I like and I know what I don't. Yeah. So.
I like haikus. Do you like haikus?
To a certain extent. I just find
limited, aren't they?
Well, I just find it an easier way for me sometimes to express myself rather than, you know, sort of just writing sort of sentences about people. I sometimes find it.
Yeah.
I certainly think poems for love and death and grief and... And
often it's when you're feeling deeply that you feel like
it is, actually. Yeah, yeah. No, the times I've written poems have been when things have been emotional charge.
Well, I don't write poetry because, and I think it's very difficult, and I don't think I have what it takes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's very brave of you to write this and share it with us. You know, and as you know, I write all kinds of prose. I'll have a go at anything, but I know I'm not a poet.
Yeah. You know, so what does a poet mean for you, though, Teresa? What does a poem need to be for you to?
I imagine that poets really wrestle with words and language and phrases, and that it takes a long time to get the word or the set of words which expresses exactly the complex of ideas and feelings that person is trying to express. And I love poetry, and I read poetry. Mm.
Well, this cinquain that I was reading about, it was an analysis of it, and as I say, it's 22 syllables in the whole poem. Mm. So it's 5 lines, and the analysis of it talks about the choice of words in the first line, the saving syllables where it's possible to keep something back. The third line, the wording gets cranked up to active images. The end of the poem moves into the present and focuses on a particular image. There's only one colour mentioned and so on. And it's when you read the analysis is probably 10 times as long.
Maybe if we can find an online version of that article. Maybe on the magazine in her hand.
It's March's writing magazine.
We might be able to find that online and share it.
But, you know, that's what I'm saying. I read that analysis and thought, I can see what they're saying about the form and about the choice of words that the poet's used. But I could never have done that myself.
Yeah. Billy Collins, who was formerly the Poet Laureate in the United States, his poetry is so accessible. Mm-hmm. And so the images are so accurate and you visualize everything he's doing, like somebody walked out of a room wearing a overcoat that had history in its pocket, not a book, but things like that. It was just wonderful.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Ogden Nash, but I don't know if you can't count him.
No, I like Ogden Nash.
And then
Heather here's chosen the wise owl as the metaphor for Linda, and I quite liked that. And I think you could maybe, you know, when you go back and start refining it, you could maybe think about, you know,
a metaphor
for everybody in terms of an animal.
I'll live with Nicola the Brave. I like that.
Yes, oh, no,
that,
I like that.
I really like that. That's very, very appropriate. So the task that we set each other actually was to, rather than trying to write biogs for ourselves, was to write a 2-sentence biography of each of the others, and that's what stimulated this. And I have to say, I was genuinely touched. I think it does express what Write Club means to us and what our friendship means to us, at the risk of making our listeners puke. But, you know, we do have something very special between us.
Like making them cry.
Very nice. And thanks for all the wonderful things you said. Down in the South, there is another form of comedic poetry that I used to have a lot of fun writing, and it's called Knee Thumpers. You know?
Knee thumpers.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Can I give you a little example?
Yeah, go on then.
One that I wrote years ago before I went to graduate school. I said, working as a secretary, most every day, end of the week comes to get my pay, and et cetera.
Oh, so it's a bit like rapping.
Yeah. It is. It's kind of going into song as well. That sounds like fun.
It was.
A fun way to spend the evening knee thumping. We'll do that sometime.
I think we should definitely do another poetry episode. One of the exercises the future learn thing was lovely. It was read, go and find a poem about this, go and find a poem about this, go and find a poem about this. Choose 2 lines, you know, couplets are they called?
Yeah.
You know, two sets of 2 lines from each poem and then make a new poem out of it.
Yeah.
Mm. Absolutely brilliant fun.
Mm. Yeah, found poetry. That's really interesting. Yeah. And it takes a bit of pressure off you of like, oh, I've got to think of something clever and creative. Yeah. Right.
You could just start with beautiful words already.
Yeah. Thanks, Heather.
There's some great stuff in there, Heather. Yeah. Well done. Thank you.
Really.
Right, let's move on. Now, Nicola, you've got a techie tip for us today, haven't you?
I have, yes. And one of the reasons for this is we keep talking about, you know, finding people who we'd like to interview on Write Club, and it's very much easier if that person has a web presence of some kind. Writers are often to be found on Twitter, and then you can generally find their website from there, and you can either, because tweeting them sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. But it's very important, I think, for writers to have a web presence. And I thought I'd just outline the three easy ways of doing it and then give you a couple of extra tips. The easiest way of all is to get a Facebook page set up. And I don't mean a Facebook profile, as we all have those naturally for interacting with our friends and family. A Facebook page is something you can set up much like a website, and it's got your contact details on it, and you can share, you know, your books and everything. In fact, you can even sell your books from your Facebook page very easily. Obviously, redirect people to Amazon if they're on there. But the main thing about Facebook pages are they are open to the search engines, so they act just like a website. And if you get a simple mailing list host, now this came up recently with Daphne Capsali, who wrote 100 Days of Solitude and You Can't Name an Unfinished Thing. She put a new cover on her book, You Can't Name an Unfinished Thing, and she put a promotion on it, 99p for the next couple of weeks. And she was able to get it quite high in the charts because she had a mailing list of people to reach out to. And, you know, she only mails us about, she doesn't ever mail us about anything else except for her writing. And she's also got a Facebook group for fans of her books. So that's a nice thing to do as well, because we're all in there talking about her books and interacting with Daphne. The second easiest way to do it is to go to WordPress.com and just open a blog on WordPress.com and then hook that up with MailChimp, which is my recommended easy way of building a mailing list.
But there are other blog providers as well.
There are, yes. Yeah, what do you use?
I use Wix.
That's right, yes, Wix. Mm. I mean, it looked great, so that's another
great one. Used WordPress as well.
Yeah, these are hosted versions of website software, so you don't have to worry about any of the technical bits. You just go along, choose a theme. Exactly. So Wix and WordPress.com, and I think it's Squarespace is another one. The third and the way that gives you most control over your own online presence is to buy your own domain name, buy a bit of hosting, and get the hosting people to install WordPress on it for you. And hook it up again with MailChimp, because MailChimp's free to up to 2,000 subscribers, which I think it would take you some to get to that point. The other thing I want to tell you about, which writers I think would find incredibly interesting, and this comes courtesy of my other podcast partner, Judith, she's found something called Substack.com, which gives you a free mailing list facility like MailChimp, but you can also then upgrade very easily to paid versions of your newsletter. So if you were writing regular short stories, for example, you could actually invite your free subscribers if they wanted to upgrade and get a short story for, say, $5 a month or something. And, of course,
that would put you under pressure to produce it, wouldn't it?
Well, it would, yes. I mean, you know, you could charge $1 a month, $5 a month, $10, you know.
What about pounds or rupees?
Well, the thing is, if you do pounds and rupees, then you're only going to get people in India or England. If you go in dollars, then people all around the world will subscribe much easier.
Right, okay.
Everyone's used to buying in dollars.
Okay.
Yeah. And finally, I just wanted to mention about Patreon, which is a very lovely website, and it enables people to put a little button on their website and get patrons of the arts to subscribe to you, one-off donations indeed, or indeed now subscriptions. So.
Yeah, and very often if you are a Patreon of a site, you'll get exclusive content.
That's right, special goodies. I just want to encourage every writer out there to just make the most basic web presence so that they can be found, if not least if we want to interview them.
Fantastic, yeah.
Interesting.
Thank you. That's really interesting. Thank you very much. Right, well, as I said at the top of the show, Heather and I recently met with Matt Owen, and he agreed to talk to Write Club, the podcast listeners. Matt's a freelance writer based in Manchester. You may not have heard of him before, but I'll bet you've heard of just about everybody that he's written for. That includes Lenny Henry, Jason Manford, Matt Ford, Al Murray. He's written for Danger Mouse, Dead Ringers and Private Eye magazine. And he teaches comedy writing for the Arvon Foundation and for Salford University. Now, his CV is much, much longer than that, but you'll have to go onto his website to read it all. And his website is Matthew with one T -owen.co.uk. We'll put a link to that on the Facebook group. As well as being an accomplished writer, he's a thoroughly nice guy, as Heather and I found out. So let's listen to the interview. So, Matt, did you always want to be a writer?
I guess I did, yeah, because I was really not very good at sciences or maths, which I guess is a science. So I could write, I could always create, and sort of make things up as I in my head. So I was kind of, yeah, I was always into it. I used to, when I was I was good at writing stories at school. I was always into that and reading. And then when I used to play cricket, and I used to sort of write a magazine for the cricket club, which sort of, it's just a way of me taking the mickey out of everyone and getting away with it, you know. And it was a way of expressing myself. But yeah, so and there was also the thing at school where I was kind of the class clown as well. So it was kind of an extension of that persona. And I was lucky enough to be able to express myself. And it's always been comedy with me. I mean, I've done a little bit of journalism, but it's like, that's always been the get out for me. It's like being, trying to be funny or being funny, as the case may be.
So what training did you do? What formal training have you done?
Absolutely none.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you didn't study creative writing or comedy or?
No, well, I did English O level, and then I did A level, and I did media studies. And I forget this, the degree of media studies. So, but I don't think that really, I mean, I think what that does is when you go to university is you go there and you meet kind of like-minded people and some people who are not quite like-minded people. So you kind of, but you do get to learn and you get to talk to people and, you know, I mean, it gave me a chance to write as well because I was writing my dissertation and there was a lot of theory involved, so I just did a lot of writing and not turning up to lectures. so bad boy. Right. Anyway, yeah. Sorry. So yeah, those are my beginnings. I mean, I always wanted to, as I say in Goodfellas, I always wanted to be a gangster. I always wanted to be a writer, and I kind of always, I just love using words, and I just love that thing. I mean, I'm quite lucky. I can sit down and I can just write. I don't find it a difficult task. It can be when you're doing work that's, I mean, because I do stuff that's not comedy related as well, and I find that a bit more of a task. But anything comedy related, I'm kind of, you know, so down with it. You know, it's just part of me. And
how did you get your first writing job?
Well, I just started. I mean, it was freelance, and I'd finished college, and I was 31 then, and I just started sending jokes off to Private Eye, and because normally Private Eye, the structure, the gag writing structure there is, they'd all go in, all the old, I say the old boys, I mean Ian and Nick, you know, like were the younger guard then, and they used to sit around writing jokes with all the other fellas. And it used to be very much from within. And then because they've always had people freelance sending cartoons in. And it's very freelance-based sort of setup they've got there because of the journalists. But they did have a core of gag writers. And then I started sending stuff in, and they started picking my stuff up. And I kind of got into a bit of a groove writing for Private Eye. Yeah, I went from there, and then I went and did some radio with a program called Weekending. I don't know if you remember Weekending on Radio 4. Newsjack is the current equivalent. They're very important programs because what they do is they get their open door policy. They're, you know, you don't have to be commissioned to get stuff actually on the show. So they kind of welcome people in from the outside to come and write stuff. New writers is very important.
Yeah, and BBC Newsjack are actively asking the public to send gags and sketches.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good Newsjack, really important. Because they do encourage people. I mean, it's like there used to be a couple of shows, even in TV, you know, so I remember shows, I mean, Spitting Image and people like that, they used to take non-commissioned stuff. And I remember sending stuff off to Smack the Pony. They used to, well, I mean, it doesn't happen nowadays in TV, but on radio they've got that one show, which is great, because otherwise it becomes a bit of a closed shop, really. And I don't think that's a good thing. I know it's very healthy, and I think it's good that people have got something to aim for if they're knocking on the door and they can't get in.
Yeah, and the BBC now have got the script room, haven't they, which they invite some people.
The writer's room is, that's another very important thing. It's like a lot of things in life, you know, you kind of... that thing where you're kind of banging on the door trying to get in, and a lot of it is about being in the right place at the right time, but you can create your own luck with shows like Newsjack. As I say, I mean, I was kind of lucky with, I mean, when Weekending was, I was in its last throes, like the last year and a half of it. I mean, you could just walk in to a broadcasting house, and there was not as much security as there is nowadays. And you just go to a writer's meeting, and there'd be a load of you sitting around, like a comedian, all sorts of people in those days, you know, who were a lot better off than me, and a lot more successful. But you'd all, that's the great thing about it is you'd all meet up, and you'd have a script meeting. But that doesn't happen now because people write remotely, you know, and they send stuff in. So it's kind of that thing where you've got to meet other writers, and that's very important as well, being able to go and chat to other writers about stuff.
So where do you find your tribe of writers to communicate with now if you're working remotely?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, you could have a chat with someone on Skype, or, you know, I mean, when I moved to Manchester, you know, I got to know a few people around here, but it's not, I'm not saying it's like a better in my day, but at least there seemed to be somewhere, a kind of a hub, you know, where you could go and meet people and exchange ideas and talk about people behind their backs. it was a really good way of, you know, kind of meeting people. And so, you know, it's like you could meet someone. I mean, a couple of mates of mine, Tom Jameson and Nev Fountain, fantastic writing team. And I just met them through that. And then, you know, we became very good, you know, become very good friends. And then you might be able to team up with someone and write something with someone, you know, because it's different. You actually meet someone, you kind of click with them. And I don't think there's quite as much as that. I mean, but I don't think there is going to be one this year, but there was a comedy thing run by Steve Doherty, and it's been going for the last 3 years, this comedy convention at in Llandudno, when it was like a load of people who wanted to start writing, along with a load of people who'd you know, experienced writers and performers. And it was great. I went along about 2 years ago, and it was a fantastic thing because it kind of reminded me of those days where, you know, you could all sit around in the pub and, you know, there was some, you know, you'd go and see someone talking about their career or whatever, and you just sit down and just talk about your craft. You know, it's called the craft of comedy. Sadly, it's not happening this year, but it kind of reminded me of those days when you'd sit around and just talk shop and about what you did.
Which is what writers' festivals are about these days, isn't it? But maybe there isn't specifically one for comedy writers. The other important thing that we spotted is Sheridan Smith's Barking Mad. Sheridan Smith's formed a new production company called Barking Mad Productions Limited, and she's put a call out on Facebook saying, I want writers and performers, new writers and performers. So when you're working, you were talking about getting together with a team. So when you're working on something, I know you worked on Danger Mouse.
Yes.
When you're working on something like that, is that alone or is it with a team of people?
Well, this is how this worked regards me and the other people. What they do is we all went for a meeting up in London because it's a co-production, the BBC and Fremantle Media. And the BBC is a co-production. So you go up to Fremantle and you all sit around in a big room, and you all what you're meant to have done is like write down four or five ideas for your episode. And I had one of my ideas taken up, and then you go away and write it remotely, as you say. And then what you do is you have your head writer, and there was a script editor, a couple of script editors, and it was a really good experience because what you do is you write your episode, and then it's like you bat it backwards and forwards, and you get a load of notes, which writers love. You get a load of notes. No, but you do. I mean, it's the best creative experience I've had because, I mean, David Quantick was a head writer, and he was fantastic. You know, he was very encouraging, and you kind of need to be walked, not so much through a minefield, but you need to be walked through it to a certain extent. Because what you're doing is you're writing for an established show. You need to have that voice. You know, there is a voice in it. you know, they you know, obviously they employ you because they know that you can offer them something as far as the gags are concerned, as far as the colour you can give it. But there's also a voice, you know, anything that's there and it's got a structure. Yeah. You're right, for animation, so it's like you can do all sorts of wild things as well. So that's a massive plus, which is great.
What are the challenges of writing for individuals? You know, established names in comedy.
Yes, yeah. I co-wrote a book with Al Murray a couple of years ago, and I mean, Al's just you know, that persona, the pub landlord, is very definite. It's so brilliant to write for, because he has that voice of that you know, the little Englander, and it kind of, and I kind of know those people as well, unfortunately, but no, it's so beautifully crafted, that character. So in that book, I kind of wrote some of it in his voice, and he also wanted other voices as well, but who had similar kind of ideology. I'm pretty good at writing other people's voices as well, so it was a good marriage of convenience, I think, because I used to write a lot of stuff for the Daily Mash, and it wasn't so much to spoof news stories, it was the I used to write spoof blogs, you know, celebrities and stuff like that. So I'm quite lucky. I'm able to pick that up, you know, the rhythm and the beat of other people's voices. And that helps when it comes to working with comedians, because we all know that. I mean, it's like there's a load of comedians I've worked with who are brilliant writers, and they, you know, it's like, I mean, like Al, for instance, just, you know, he writes his shows, you know, he's a brilliant writer, performer. But, you know, sometimes, like, for instance, with that book, it needed to be done really quickly. So, you know, Andy Zaltzman, Matt Ford and myself, you know, we wrote some bits in the book because, you know, time, you know, waits for no man. So you just got to get these things done.
Yeah.
So as far as the, you know, working with other comedians is concerned, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes it works really well. And then some, you know, sometimes if you work on a show, you're just, you know, you're just there to like, to just reinforce them, really. Just give them a little bit of help, even though these people know, the majority of them, you know, it's like not everyone's like, let's take for instance, I mean, Bob Hope, you know, fantastic comic, not really my cup of tea, but yeah, he was obviously fantastically successful, but he didn't write his own jokes. I mean, he had a team of writers. The thing is, that's a lot of people say, oh, that's not a very good thing. I say, well, no, that's, it's like a load of writers got a load of work out of it. So there's nothing wrong with that. So as far as I'm concerned, I'd love to have written for Bob Hope. But yeah, it is, and it's very interesting when you're working with people, you see the way they think, you know, it's like, and it's like, no, we can, you'd write a gag, and it's like, well, can't we do it this way? And it's like, oh yeah, because I wouldn't say that. Always have to work within the boundaries of their voice, which is great, because you have a definite voice in your head that you're writing for, and I'd rather work that way anyway.
You just said that you'd like to have worked for Bob Hope or with Bob Hope. Are there any other television shows or people that you haven't worked with yet that you want to? This is your chance to pitch to them if they're listening.
Oh God, my favourite writing partnership, Clemens and Lefrenet. Ian Lefrenet was on the Danny Baker show the other day, and he was telling some marvellous stories. But I just love. It was quite interesting because Danny Baker picked up on something really that I've kind of noticed myself through watching all their shows again and again and again. It's the fact that they don't actually write, because nowadays you just got to write gag, gag, gag. In a sitcom, you have to be gags all the time, which, you know, it's not a bad thing. But the thing is with them is that they let the characters breathe. It's not all about gags. And I just like the knowingness, you know, there's of their characters. They're kind of, you know, especially the like Lads Porridge, Alfieda St. Pat. They all come from that place, that very, very working class. And then you got in the Lucky Lads, in whatever happened to the Lucky Lads, then you got Bob as an aspiring middle class chap. And Terry, who's like, he doesn't want to know any of that. He's not interested in it at all. And I think that's when the real genius of those two came out. There's some brilliant comedy at the moment. I mean, I really like the Partridge at the moment is kind of, it's, some people love it, some people hate it, but I love it. I think it's great. There is some there's some fantastic comedy out there. If I had a chance, I would love to be able to write something like Clemens of the Frenet, which is kind of, you know, it's like very knowing, and it comes from that, you know, that very working class place. I don't know. It seems to me nowadays that with Alvida St. Pett, for instance, they wrote all those characters. I mean, the best ones are not plot driven. The ones that were produced by Central, there were 13 50-minute episodes, and they let the characters breathe. And to be able to do that is nowadays, I'd say, in a comedy drama, if you can use that phrase, you know, it's like that. I don't think you'd get that opportunity now because of money. One of the things is budget, you know, because they wouldn't have, they say no, because with the BBC ones, you had 6-hour-long episodes. And as I say, it was plot driven, and it wasn't about people just, sometimes you get people just sitting around talking to one another, and it's beautifully observed. And it is the way people chat, you know, it's like the way people talk. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're given that opportunity nowadays. Not unless you're a massive, you know, it's like, not unless you're a massive name. You can't sit down. Because nowadays, I mean, especially in America, the whole thing about the writer-performer is still quite a big thing, you know. I mean, Seinfeld was I love Seinfeld. But, you know, they spend half of their time. It is that thing about the sitcom that's about nothing. And that's what's glorious about it. You know, it doesn't have to be about, you know, oh, my God, the vicar's coming round for tea. And, you know, and it's not. It isn't about one big thing. It's not high concept. It's just about a load of idiots talking nonsense, you know. And it's about observational comedy as well. One of my big regrets is I was up in Edinburgh at the Fringe about 3 years ago, and I just missed out on getting tickets to see the great Rodney Bewes, and sadly he passed away, didn't he, about 2 ago. But I'd love to have gone to that because he loved talking about it. He just wanted, Rodney Bewes just wanted to talk about it because it was a fantastic time in his career, you know. And you know, it wasn't the only thing he did. I mean, it's like he was also in Billy Liar, which is one of my favourite films. A lot of people forget that.
There's another company looking for new writers for television, which is 1000films.co.uk. So if our listeners are sitting out there deciding that they're going to try and get onto one of these shows.
Oh, blimey. I think you need, first of all, you need to have a, and that sounds obvious, you need to have a script. I mean, it's like getting an agent. They need to see a script. They need to see something. Or with, you know, with comedy writing, if you want to get an agent or you need to have done something. And if you've written a brilliant script or something like that, I mean, that's a great way in. If you've got, you can, it's no use approaching anyone unless you've got, if you haven't got anything. In other words, you have to put the work in, you know, and they need to know that you're taking it seriously. You know, it's like anyone can sort of like say, well, you know, I fancy being a writer. You know, it's like, well, what have you got to show me? Mm-hmm. You know, because there's a lot of people on, you know, because I probably spend far too much time on Twitter. But, you know, it's a good way. By the way, Twitter's a really good way of sharpening your gag writing skills up, actually, because you have to get your message over in, you know, so many characters. But anyway, I see a lot in a lot of people's biogs, you know, I'm a writer. And no, you're not. You write a blog. It's like you're not a writer. You know, it's like you're writing your diary that thousands of people or hundreds of people might be able to see. That's what it is. If you're a writer, in my mind, you know, it's like, I mean, I wrote my first play last year. I mean, I'd never think about writing a play, but my mate Lisa asked me to write a play for this festival she was doing. And now I feel I'm a bit more grown up now. I've written a play because I feel a bit fancy, you know. It's like but I say to people that, you know, just write. I write a script, write a play, write a book. I mean, I ghosted a book last year as well. So that was really difficult. I found that really difficult. And it's like it's all about pushing yourself. And I think for a long time I haven't been truthful myself because I haven't pushed myself enough when it comes to different disciplines. But I think that thing, as you say, about presenting something to someone, people will take you that much more seriously and they can see that you've challenged yourself because it's not easy. It's not easy for anyone. You know, even someone like myself who's like, you know, could spend, you know, most of my day writing. And, you know, it's like all that thing about, oh, you've got to write for 1 or 2 hours every day. Yeah, fair enough. But, you know, you've got to produce something at the end of it. So you do have to challenge yourself. Even if you are an experienced writer, you're constantly doing that thing. And it's, yeah. I think it's very important that you're constantly evolving as well. No, I say that you have to be a real enthusiast if you want to get stuff published. You know, you get the gnarled old pros. I mean, I can be like a bit of a gnarled old pro at times, but there is that thing where you are genuinely enthusiastic about it, and I think that's one of the things that you need to have. You need to be very enthusiastic about what you're doing, and it is difficult. I mean, because, you know, you ask me these questions. I didn't know it. When I started, I would submit things to people like Rory Bremner. This is going back a bit. I'd fax stuff off, go back a bit in it. But I used to walk 2 miles into town to this place where it had a fax machine, and that's how enthusiastic I was. And I'm thinking, I wouldn't do that one. Obviously, I could just, you know, email stuff and things like that. But in that way, it's like you have to have that fire burning within you. You have to want it, even more so nowadays, because, as I say, you know, there aren't as many outlets. And if you want to write professionally as well, if someone comes to you and they want you to write something, never do anything for nothing. I mean, I had there was a daily newspaper that came to me during the last royal wedding, which I keep losing track of these things. Prince Harry got married, and William was his best man. And because I write wedding speeches as well, I'll do anything if you pay me to do it. So anyway, I wrote because I write these spoof diaries and things. I wrote, they said to me, and it's a big newspaper. I shan't mention their name. Anyway, they said to me, would you like to, they messaged me on Twitter, said, would you like to write this spoof wedding speech by, you know, like Prince William? I said, okay. Then I said, what's the rate then? So no, there's no rate. What we'll do is we'll give you, we'll mention your Twitter handle, and we'll just mention your website. I said, listen, mate, if there's no money, there's no words. It's as simple as that. And, you know, it's like that thing about if you want to write it professionally, you get to a certain standard and you just have to get paid for it. I mean, it's like you're not going to get your plumber come round to, you know, unblock your bog or whatever. You know, what I'll do is I'll go on Twitter and I'll recommend you or something like good publicity. And it's not going to happen, is it? You think about anything else in life, you know.
There's a story there, isn't there? There's a script there.
Oh, there, without a shadow of a doubt, yeah.
In fact, there's a whole character there, somebody that really thinks that they can get by just recommending people and adding their name to it.
I think they these people do exist. I have, yes. I've had some pretty rum experiences, you know, over the years. But the thing is, though, they have this incredible thing. They try to make you feel like the bad guy. Well, no, I just want to get paid for what I do. You know, this is how I put food on the table. You know, but that's once you get to a certain stage as a writer. Yeah. You know, there are. I mean, because when you're writing for Newsjack, you're writing for experience. If it makes it to air, then you get paid. And the more stuff you get on air, the more experience you've got. You know, it's like, that's, you know what you're getting into there. You're getting into that situation where you're thinking, well, you know, if I scratch their back, they're going to scratch mine. Yeah. They're going to give me a little bit of money and you get a credit.
Stock, isn't it? Building your stock, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a credit as well. So credit's very important on your CV. Yeah. So
brilliant.
Well, great. Thanks.
Matt, that's been really useful. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Right, there, I told you he was a good guy, didn't I? So anyone else inspired to try writing for television?
No.
Well, I have a little sort of background project, which hasn't gone anywhere, but it's an idea that I had and that I shared with Alison Robertson. And sometime we're going to put this together. We've got an idea for Netflix, for a little Netflix serial.
But
we haven't quite got around to formulating it. We need to get to, we need to spend more time together to work on it.
How about you, Heather?
No.
No, okay.
Simple answer. I mean, theoretically, we should be interested, because theoretically it should be easier, because you just write the dialogue and
the character outlines? And I mean, I'm just spitballing here. I've got no idea what's involved in writing.
I've read a book
on how to do it.
Robert McKee.
Oh, okay.
What's it called? Story. I think it's just called Story by Robert McKee. Yes. And which goes into quite a lot of detail. And there is a particular approach to it, a particular way of doing it. And you might like it because you like all the plotting and design of the structure. And basically, my understanding is that's what you do. The last thing you do is write the dialogue.
Mm. Oh, okay.
You plot it out scene by scene and moment by moment. Yeah.
In all seriousness, I have written a play. And I started by trying to write the dialogue and then realised that was just totally the wrong approach because it got so complicated as who was saying what and what was it about. So it was going back to the plotting and planning.
Mm. Mm. Oh, I might have a look at that then.
Yeah.
That book is on my writing Sudoku.
Yeah, no, it's a very good book. It's a very good book. And you can apply it to other forms of writing, novel writing and so on. And I think writing for television is not the same as writing for the theatre, but I think it has some things in common, and one of the things it has in common is you have to leave creative space for the other professionals who will be involved.
Yeah.
You're just creating a blueprint, so it's not your job to tell the cameraman where to put the camera. You know, and all of those things, or the actors how to act.
And of course, many television writers, as with Matt, have also been involved in feature films and vice versa, so there's a bit of a crossover there between, you know, the long film and the short series and so on. Anybody got any favourite TV writers? Heather?
Well, because I don't have a television, I found this quite hard. So I had to dig back in the memories. And all I could think of was The Likely Lads.
Oh.
And Dick Clements and Ian Lefrenet.
Which is actually Matt Owen's profile picture on his Facebook.
Right. Because way back then I thought the writing was superb, and whenever they brought, you know, sort of a more modern version out, I thought it was fantastic. But maybe I should go out and buy television.
No, that's a bit drastic.
That's a bit drastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't watch TV on your laptop or your iPad or anything?
No, no. She only watches TV when she's looking after a daughter and sitting there watching TV.
That's right. And then I watch two episodes of The Big Bang Theory and Friends every day for 2 weeks.
Linda.
MASH was one of my favourites. It was written so well, so tightly. Everything just seemed, and it went fast.
And it was a real ensemble piece.
Yes, and I thought, how on earth do they come up with this kind of dialogue to be so fast and so appropriate in each one?
Mm.
And that was, I know it was brought to TV by Larry Gelbart and written by, the writer's name is Richard Hooker, but he actually is a pen name for two other writers, W.C. Hines and H. Richard Hornberger.
So that was the original novel.
Novel. And so I just think it's fabulous. And I wish I had been sitting around the table with them. That would have been fun.
Yeah. And I bet there was a lot, you know, there must be an awful lot to create an hour of TV. It must be many, many hours of work and writing.
But imagine the fun they're having up with this kind of...
If I had my life again, I think I might try and get into a writer's room.
Wouldn't it be lovely? It would be brilliant, wouldn't it? And MASH, I used to love MASH. I was still at school when it was on. Yeah, it used to be on Sunday night. And we weren't allowed to watch it because my dad, in a slightly Basil Fawlty-ish way, my dad was in the war in Korea, it was no joke.
Right.
We weren't allowed to go. I used to go, and she may be listening, I used to go to my friend Sue Orty's house on Sunday nights, and we used to sit in the dark and watch MASH because her dad was always out on a Sunday night. So that's a great memory. That's how much we love MASH.
And of course, the theme song "Suicide Is Painless" actually went to number one in the UK charts.
was that from the film or the?
I'm not
TV
sure.
Series?
I'm not sure.
It was
sure,
a TV series.
It was definitely a number one hit.
I can look up the lyrics to that. "Suicide Is Painless."
It's dark. Yeah.
Yeah.
Black comedy.
There you go. Another place for poems and songs.
It was actually probably one of the first really successful American shows on British television.
Probably,
when I think about it.
I don't think so. I can remember as a child, I Love Lucy, Bewitched, I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh, Bewitched, I adored you. Anyway, we're getting off the subject. Nicola, who are your favourite TV writers?
Thinking about something I've really, really, really enjoyed recently is Preacher. And that's based on a comic series of novels, which is interesting, by Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon. And then obviously it's been adapted for TV, but the writing in it is just incredible. I really, you know, again, tight, funny, scary, fast-paced.
So those writers that you named, did they write the novel?
Or they wrote the series of comic novels from which the TV series has been made.
Right.
And I love Silent Witness. I know that the plots are very far-fetched, as Reza says. But that's created by Nigel McCreary, who was a murder squad detective in Nottingham. And he went on to write new tricks as well. So he's not retiring without any pension, is he? Right.
And are these people actually writing the scripts?
Yes, they are the TV writers. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I've always liked the way Linda LaPlante's work has been
she
adapted.
Writes fabulous television.
Yeah, she really writes, does. You know, I mean, I've enjoyed her books as well, but actually if I see anything on that's, you know, either from an original idea by Linda LaPlante, because she tends to get involved in the process of screenwriting, but I think it's probably a team with those kind of
big series. Is she responsible for DCI Tennyson? I love DCI Tennyson.
Yeah, Prime
Suspect. Prime Suspect. She wrote those.
And many others.
Above Suspicion, brilliant. Yeah. I've watched them over and over again. Yeah. They're very,
really
very good.
Enjoyed them. How about you, Teresa?
Oh, I've got a list. Tell me when you want me to shut up. Absolutely love Deadwood, written by David Milch.
I did too.
Superb characters.
I bought the whole thing.
Yeah, love that. Jimmy McGovern is a stalwart of British television. He's written so many series. Started out, as so many great writers did, writing for soap opera, writing Brookside. Mm-hmm. Now, I get cross when people are a bit snooty about soap operas and say, you know, it's rubbish, badly written, badly acted. We won't even start on the actors who've, you know, the fabulous actors who've been in so many soap operas. But Jimmy McGovern and the wonderful Sally Wainwright have both written soap operas. But Jimmy McGovern went on to write Cracker, The Street, Accused, and one that I watched recently, which is just a wonderful story about a Catholic priest struggling with his faith, struggling with the problems of his parishioners in an area of great poverty. And that was Broken.
Wonderful.
So he is a fabulous writer. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Sally Wainwright. I think we all love Last Tango in Halifax, Happy Valley. Those are just absolutely wonderful. Yeah. She's also written for The Archers and Emmerdale earlier in her career. And I'm a massive fan of Scott and Bailey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she didn't write all of them, but she wrote most of them. And then somebody else I want to mention is Amelia Bullmore. And she actually is an actor, but she wrote 7 episodes of Scott and Bailey. And she's got a new project coming up, and it's going to be on the Alibi channel later in the year. They haven't started filming yet, I don't think, but she's written something called Traces, which is about forensic scientists.
Nice. Oh, yes.
So that's what we're looking forward to. Yeah. Must mention Jed Mercurio, who's got the coolest name in television, hasn't he? Jed Mercurio, fabulous name.
That's Line of Duty.
Line of Duty, and I think there's a new Line of Duty coming out this year.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and there will be a series 2 of The Bodyguard.
Now,
there were things in The Bodyguard I found a little bit implausible, like a guy with PTSD is not going to get a job as bodyguard for the Home Secretary. There's no way that he would have got through the vetting. But you have to just let that go.
Right.
But he always surprises. And the first series of Line of Duty, and I think I've watched it twice, I still don't know. Was she bent or was she not? You know, I still don't know. And there's so many twists and turns. So he's a brilliant, brilliant TV writer. Can I do one more?
Yeah.
Boardwalk Empire, the best television ever. Terrence Winter, the writer. Somebody once said to me a couple of years ago, you must watch Breaking Bad, it's the best TV ever written. Mm-hmm. And I watched the first series and I thought, well, yeah, it was a good premise, it was okay, but there were scenes in that could have been better done. Boardwalk Empire is just superb. Very cinematic values, you know, just brilliantly tightly written, a huge cast of characters, complex characters, interesting characters, Nookie, a career criminal, maybe at one step removed from the violence, but also with this other side of him that's charitable and kind and generous. So I just absolutely loved that. We see the rise of Al Capone and all of these things. Brilliant. So I love TV. I hate it when people are snobby about watching TV. And I think the best writers are working in TV.
Because nobody else has mentioned her, I've got to say Anne Cleve as well.
Yeah.
Because she's writing Shetland and she's also writing Vera, which are two of my favourite. They're sort of quite gentle gentle kind of crime shows.
They have a good pace and a slower pace.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that she's written the actual episodes, but that she's written the books that they're based on. Okay. And some of the Veras now, I think, are not necessarily associated with a book that,
Same with Call the Midwife, isn't it? Jennifer Ward wrote the original books. And I think that's something to remember, that there's very often a team of writers producing television, and there's also, as you said, there's cameramen, directors, producers,
costume people.
You know, there's so many people. Right. It's very much like the theatre. You know, the writers are more part of the team.
Not to mention the best boys, whatever the best boys do.
Nobody knows. And there's a gaffer. Nobody knows what's the gaffer.
Well, you know, one of the things that sort of annoys me is when there's a wonderful show like these we're talking about, and when people talk about them, they talk about the actors. Oh, remember when he said this or that? And it's the actor that they consider to be funny or what. I mean, I'm sure they know somebody wrote it, but that's not mentioned. And so the writers are kind of, I always want to say, when so-and-so wrote this line, what's it?
I think, you know, when we talk about Sally Wainwright, it is almost like an ensemble theatre group. There are actors that she loves to work with and loves to write for, and they work together. And as I said with Scott and Bailey, some of the actors became involved in the writing process, where that was intended from the start. I don't know. But you need great writing. You know, the best actor in the world can't do anything with a script where people talk like Daleks, unless you're playing a Dalek. You know. So you need both.
Excuse me, but what's a Dalek?
What is a Dalek? A kind of robot, shall we say? No, it's an alien creature.
They kick a tin can, and they can't go upstairs.
So do you know Doctor Who?
No.
It's an iconic British television series.
Running since the 1960s, and people used to be so scared of the Daleks when we were children in the 60s.
I used to hide behind a cushion.
Really?
I was so scared of the Daleks.
It's like a dustbin with a plunger.
And they go, exterminate.
So we need better dialogue than that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just to say that there are so many television channels springing up, and, you know, now that all Amazon and everyone's getting into video and television as well, there is such a demand for great scripts.
There is.
So do, if you're listening and you fancy having a go at it, get the book by
get
story.
The book, and look online for resources and ideas and help with how you structure it, how to pitch it. Because, yes, we are living in a golden age of television, but we're consuming it so fast. We're consuming it all the time, so we need more great shows.
Yes. And people want to binge watch, so they release them all at once, because we get that dopamine hit when we know there's another one coming up.
And we can't go to bed.
Yeah, that's what we do. Helen and I watched, and this is a British one, Doc Martin. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't stop. We watched till like 2 a.m.
Yep. Right, I'm gonna call us to order.
Wait a minute, I don't know why they're laughing.
It's just me, you know. Having said, I don't like people being snooty, but Doc Martin's like children's television to me. I watched one episode and I wasn't taken.
Okay,
he's a very well respected British actor.
Very popular.
Okay. Right, well, it's almost time to go, but before we do, let me ask Linda. Linda, what's on your bedside table?
Oh, I've made another discovery that I can't put down. I couldn't pass up the title. It's called The Bar Harbor Retirement Home for Famous Writers and Their Muses.
Okay.
It's written by Terry Lynn DeFino, and it's published with William Morrow. And I was thinking, oh, this will be good research, because that sounds like a place I want to go when I'm all worn out. But it's a retirement home where people in the publishing world, especially famous writers, go to pass the later years. And they behave naturally, as legendary writers and editors do. And there's one literary giant, Alphonse Carducci, who's accustomed to being center stage. And he was always a man of great appetites, which he really indulged. But now he's got major writer's block in this home. And he's looking back with some regret at all the excesses he indulged in. And their nurses and orderlies are wonderful. And one in particular, her name is Cecy Bell. She was horribly scarred earlier in life, and she's always been very shy and retiring because of the scarring on her face. But Alphonse develops this fondness for her, and it starts him writing again.
Thank you for that.
And maybe we need to, you know, think about setting up this home for the six of us.
Yes,
so we can all be together.
I'm already part of a conglomerate that's setting up a home.
Oh, yes, you are.
Another crowd of people that I'm setting up a home with. But okay. I'll see if they'll have you lot in.
Okay.
Okay. And now we're going to hear from Sarah Gangi from the Winchester Writers Festival. Sarah, what's on your bedside table?
Currently, I just started reading Jasper Ford's new book, Early Riser. It's his most current book. It is hysterical. And his wordplay is absolutely genius. I don't want to tell you very much about it, but you are definitely thrown into an alternate universe right away. And it's slightly dystopian, but it's really funny. I love his books, and I've enjoyed many of them.
Well, we have to leave you once again. So while the theme tune is playing out, why not share the link to this podcast with all your Facebook friends? And if you're one of our listeners in South Africa, maybe you could email the link to some fellow writers, because we simply don't have enough of you there just yet. Don't forget to tell your podcast provider how much you like us by leaving a 5-star review. And please come back next week. Until then,
bye.